This is the Lunch Bunch with Andrew Hawthorne and Company on VOCM. For the next half hour, we will peek behind the big stories we are all talking about today. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your host of the Lunch Bunch, Andrew Hawthorne.
Tis I, Andrew Hawthorne. I'm hosting the Lunch Bunch. Welcome. I hope you're somewhere nice and cozy out there, because it is very snowy and blowy, and I've seen about four different weather statements, and they're all contradictory, anywhere between 2 centimeters to 10 centimeters here for the metro area, followed by rain. I hope rain. There's a giant ridge of ice in front of my driveway. Not my fault, by the way, but we can get into that on another Lunch Bunch.
Those numbers aren't helpful. We should classify weather by, you know, how yucky it is, like really yucky, gross by. Just, and then you can use expletive.
I agree. The Gander Weather Office says it's some yucky.
There
is
you go.
How we should refer to this stuff.
Some yucky out there.
Yeah. The other voice you're hearing out there is Jen Dion, who's the producing artistic director of Persistence Theater. Also joining us, Mallory Fisher, associate producer of Artistic Fraud. Hi, Mallory.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
And we're here to just talk about the weather and how gross it is. It's pretty horrible, isn't it?
It was. Took us, what, 45 to get in? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a fun time. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about today, or shall we wrap it?
Okay, well, that was good times.
That was good time. Yeah. We do need to talk about one thing. You're running a really fascinating workshop on the weekend that I'd really like to talk about. And it's actually a conference. There's several workshops that are going to be happening involving two really important topics, stage intimacy and also just respectful workplace environment. That's something that we've talked about a lot in terms of the business community and the corporate atmosphere or something, having a respectful environment. But it's also an issue in the arts, as we've seen in, you know, most famously with the Harvey Weinstein trial and things going there, if we want to get that extreme. Like, there are problems with having a respectful workplace if you're an artistic professional.
Well, I mean, we are businesses as well.
It's exactly.
What everybody forget. And interestingly, I don't know if you know this, Andrew, but January 1st in Newfoundland and Labrador, there's new legislation that just came into being. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about it, because it's actually groundswell changing across Canada. We are a leader in that. As of January 1st, every single business in Newfoundland and Labrador, whether you're an arts organization or you make tables, you have to have anti-harassment training as an employer. You have to have a harassment prevention plan developed for your business, and you have to provide training in that plan to your employees. So those three steps are just going to change workplace culture across our province. And this just came into effect as of January 1st. So by having this conference, this is one aspect of it, is going to fulfill one aspect of the requirement for Workplace NL. But of course, that's not why we're having it.
What's crazy about you saying that for me is that it just came into effect on January 1st. And for me, whenever we talk about things like harassment and these issues, the shocking thing is always how not that far how we deal with these issues is. Do you find that?
Well, you know, we're actually the first province in Canada to have gone this far with it.
Wow.
Because, I mean, everybody's got human rights code things. I mean, there's protected grounds under which you cannot discriminate someone. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to issues like workplace harassment, bullying, sexual harassment, those things are not often covered in workplace legislation. I mean, to ask any business, small business, large business, a corporation, now to say, you have to undergo training, you need to learn how it's done and do it right, and you have to share that with your employers, well, that's a lot of work for every business. That's as controversial as, oh, I don't know, changing the minimum wage. I mean, it's going to cost money, it's going to take time, and you got to put it in place. So I'm really applaud Newfoundland and Labrador for being a leader to set that as the standard, as it should be, in today's world.
Absolutely. Mallory, what kind of, you know, transitioning from that into the conference this weekend, when people go to the conference, well, what kind of things are going to be covered when we're talking about things there?
Well, like Jen was saying, a lot of what we'll talk about, I'm sure, will be around creating those policies and making sure that those policies are, you know, communicated and disseminated. Something that is coming up more and more because, admittedly, it's a gray area when it comes to figuring out what the language is going to be around this, because we are kind of trailblazing a new path of what this is going to look like in the future. And so one of the things that comes up to is like, what is the specific process and how can we support people who may have a complaint or need to come forward, and how do we measure things like reprisal? So how do we make sure that there are no consequences for coming forward in terms of a change in their workplace environment? Like, how do we measure that?
How do we protect those people? Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Because something like reprisal, can be something that you feel. And how do you measure those things? I don't know. But we're even just having the conversation leads to more detailed policies, more clear steps in how to support people when they're dealing with these kinds of things. And then the other side of it is the intimacy choreography.
And this is fascinating because this is something that Canada is really blazing a trail in world theater. And Siobhan Richardson, who's a very old friend of mine, has been doing this stuff all over the place. And it's an outgrowth from stage fighting choreography, I think, because on stage, you as an actor, you learn to fight in a safe way where you're punching people and not connecting, or you're sword fighting or something. But when it comes to intimacy or love scene, even something like a hug and a kiss, that's never really been part of the conversation of how you choreograph
that. Yeah. And it's amazing to me, looking back on my own professional practice over the last 20, 25 years, all of the very many love scenes that my direction has been so, from my eyes of 2020 now, irresponsible. Just saying to actors, just go for it, more passionate,
And it's always awkward, right? It's nobody really before now has really had the conversation on how you do that.
And that's what I'm hungry for, which is so great. I'm actually going to attend and teach part of this. So I'm not teaching the intimacy workshop. I'm doing the other half. And I did it in such a way so I can make sure I can go to the intimacy part. But yeah, helping actors do it with consent, with safety. And of course, none of that takes away from the beautiful passion of the story that you end up seeing on stage, but it is finding the ways to do it so we don't encounter environments that are unsafe for any of the actors.
Mm-hmm. Well, the connection too between like stage combat and intimacy direction is like keeping the body safe, but also keeping your spirit and your emotional abilities safe. And that's kind of what the intimacy direction brings to it. It's creating a safe environment, both physically and emotionally, so that you can do the hard, vulnerable work that's being asked of you. How often do we hear people talk about like actors' chemistry, like the chemistry
right.
that they have?
Oh,
and
yeah.
something that I worked with an intimacy director on a play that I directed in Toronto last year, and something that would come up often was like that chemistry, that like elusive quality that we're talking about, that's like a mask for something that doesn't exist. Like, that is something we also manufacture, that is something that we also choreograph, that we're in creating this safe environment, we're creating steps, process, practice, so that we can actively talk about what we're going to do to make that happen and not just rely on some elusive magical thing that apparently does or does not exist.
Because it is a performance.
And it should be controlled.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, that is the art in the control of what you're doing. And there are real consequences when it's not like that. I was just telling the newsroom a little while ago about the case of Maria Schneider, who is the lead in Last Tango in Paris, right? And, this is just one of many of the horror stories out there about this. But, of course, there are intimate scenes in that movie involving Marlon Brando. And they did them where Brando, the lead actor, talked to the director about how he wanted the scene to go, but they didn't talk to Maria at all, and resulted in really damaging scenes for her that caused immense mental damage and stress to her.
Well, that's when it becomes assault.
It becomes assault, right? And so when you get to an artistic production, like, those conversations haven't really been had. And that movie came out in the 70s, and they still haven't been had until only recently.
Yeah, and dispelling the myth that, you know, shock and surprise, it, and this idea of following your impulses is a thing to be valued. Like, yes, we should follow our impulses, but within the framework that we've laid out, everybody should know what is going to happen step by step. Like, the act of surprise isn't a positive thing in that context, because it can actually shake someone and prevent them from doing their job. So eliminating that surprise is part of it. You can't give consent if you don't know what's going to happen, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the nice things that the conference is going to do is not only we're going to have the opportunity to learn from some experts, but it's going to bring us together. So it's really nice. We've got room for 48 bodies. Half of us are going to be in the director-manager stream, and the other half are going to be from a performance stream. So everyone's going to do both workshops, but they're going to come at it with a really directed perspective to their experience as an artist or practitioner.
It's a really fascinating thing. You can find out about it on Persistence's Facebook page and the event page, of course. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to continue talking about this here on the VOCM Lunch Bunch. Stay tuned, folks.
Now back to Andrew Hawthorne and the Lunch Bunch on VOCM.
We're back. We're talking about a really fascinating conference that Persistence is putting off on Monday. But before we get to that, Jen Dion, you running for premier or what?
No, are you kidding me? There are so many better women out there. Like, we were just talking about it, Ruth Lawrence, right? You want, you want a passionate woman from the arts community, Ruth for premier.
So we've been talking about this. Obviously, like, we're all scrambling here now trying to figure out what's going on with the premiership. And one of the conversations happening, especially online, is where all my ladies be at. Running for that chair. So let's just, like, harvest the theater community here. Like, give me a couple names of folks who you would like to see chuck it all and go for the worst job in the province right now.
I mean, I don't want to lose any of our amazing women that we have in theater to politics.
Sure.
True, but we do have some fierce women who would be...
I know, that's why I don't want to lose them.
Well, think about, like, not just in the theater community, but Kala Lachance from the dance
amazing.
Community.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my
yeah,
God.
The whole artistic community. Let's get some more artists up there.
Yeah, oh
that's
my gonna God.
Be, they're going to have some new ideas on how to solve things.
Philippa Jones from the Eastern Edge Gallery. Mm-hmm. Writers, oh my God, Lisa Moore.
There you go. Yeah, heck
Hello?
Yeah.
I'd
right?
like to see Meg Coles.
Lisa Moore was the editor of the Democracy Cookbook, so
right?
she's familiar with these issues.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Meg Coles for premier in my world.
Meg Coles? Explicate that for me. Who is Meg Coles?
She is a writer. She released a book that was getting a lot of buzz this year called...
Small Game Hunting.
At the local Coward Gun Club.
Yep.
That's right. And
oh,
she's
yeah.
also a playwright. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
getting a lot of buzz,
yeah.
too.
And she's so direct. Meg has such a fit. And I think that's, I mean, really, whoever it is, please just cut through the crap and tell us the truth. Meg has that ability. She will not pull any punches. She will be just like, no, this is the way it is, and it's bad, and we all need to face that.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So obviously, as a journalist, as a reporter, as a broadcaster, I want somebody who's going to answer my questions in there. And from the artistic community, a writer, an actor, a performer, a dancer, they're going to know how to communicate an idea, right? But they're also used to being broke all the time and needing money. So
right.
they're going to be really used to, you know, writing some grants maybe.
Hey now, some of us pay our mortgages through the arts community.
I was talking about the endeavor of being an artist,
okay.
not about the profitability. You know?
Sure enough, yeah. It is a struggle. And also the fact that as artists in general, we're self-aware. And I think self-awareness is a part of connecting to your compassion as a leader, as a statesperson. I mean, the term politician has become so muddied now as you know, almost to be equated with somebody who is inauthentic or ambitious.
It's where, almost a joke.
Right.
Yeah.
So to know oneself and to be able to connect that to your compassion for others, I think artists are very well served. I do think it's a high recommendation for public office, and well put of you to suggest it.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. I'm putting out a call to the arts community to get up there and take one for the team is really what I'm asking here. So, about that. But, you know, I think that the point you raise is very valid, that there's a difference, I think, a nominal one in people's minds between politics and statecraft. And somehow politics has become caught up in very negative, kind of slimy connotations where you're really avoiding a point rather than getting to it and dealing with a problem.
I can't remember who said it, but the quote that resonates with me is politicians look ahead 4 years. A statesperson looks ahead 40.
Wow.
I know, right?
All right. Well, yeah. if you're that person...
call now.
Let's be in the Arch Bunch. Yes, please. Yeah, call now.
Our lines are open.
Join the Lunch Bunch. No, yeah. Please. You know, we were talking about the bit of a gender deficit in terms of who is looking at the premier's chair right now. But there's a bit of a gender imbalance in the conference as well that's interesting. Can you talk about that a bit?
I don't know if I was surprised. I guess I am. I'm surprised and disappointed because I'm just a rose-colored glass optimist, but we only have four of our 48 signed up who are of and identify as
of
men.
Of the doodly persuasion.
Yeah, the doodly persuasion.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I do ask myself, what does that mean? Does it mean anything? Does it mean just the dudes are busy? Maybe it means we just have more women in the arts community here.
I don't know.
What do you think?
What is the split of the arts community? Do you think that there's, is it an even gendered divide?
I've always said that the theater community in St. John's is a matriarchal culture because we have so many amazing women that are like spearheading what we do here, like Lois Brown, Nicole Rousseau, Danielle Irvine, Ruth Lawrence. The list goes on and on. So I don't know. It could be that. I would just like to take this opportunity to say that men or anybody who identifies as male is absolutely welcome at the conference. And in fact, we need you to be at the conference.
We do because
we can't do it on our own.
How can we talk about perspectives without having all the different perspectives in the room?
Yeah,
you know,
and you know, as somebody who's been an actor who's a dude or identifies as a dude or whatever you want, like especially stage intimacy and stuff, that is a conversation that I've had that I've been in a position of that has been extremely awkward. It seems like the application of the things that you're talking about is obvious to anybody that wants to do art with another person, unless you're, you know, a painter or something. You're going to lock yourself in a room and hopefully have no other people around.
Well, all of this is about power. You know, respect on the stage, how we tell a story, how we work in any workplace, it's about when respect goes wrong, it's an abuse of power. And traditionally, we live in a patriarchy where men have had that power in more often than not. In a disproportional amount. So when we talk about balancing the scales through better respectful workplace practice, through better practice in how we create our art through tools such as intimacy choreography, when you leave men out of that conversation, we're not able to balance those scales as effectively as we should be.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's important to acknowledge that the patriarchy itself is a set of ideas and constructs that have been established and that we all live by, but it is actually genderless. The patriarchy itself has no gender. So when we're talking about the patriarchy, I'm not talking about men. I'm talking about a set of values.
And that is what especially the online critical intelligentsia will immediately jump on, like, oh, you're talking about men. But
no.
It is not really talking about
absolutely
men
not. I mean, women can uphold the patriarchy as much as men do. You know, it is. It's about power and
it's
who has it.
And a benefiting from power in a disproportional and unfair sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost about habit as well. Like people learn this stuff through osmosis and kind of assume certain positions. Or
And it is like a reality of the culture that we live in. And when you are like brought up in that culture, you have those qualities in you. I'm always undoing my internal patriarchal ideas. Like it's an ongoing practice of, you know, checking yourself, checking your privilege, noticing like what your immediate reactions are to things when you take power and how you take it when it's available to you. Like all of those things have to be under a constant sense of self-reflection, and that's everybody's responsibility equally.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Smashing the Patriarchy here on VOCM Lunch Bunch. Please stay tuned.
Now back to Andrew Hawthorne and the Lunch Bunch on VOCM.
We're back. We are speaking with Jen Dion of Persistence Theater, Mallory Fisher of Artistic Fraud, and a really interesting conference that's going to be happening on Monday. That's, amongst other things, talking about respectful workplaces in the arts, stage intimacy, choreography, and all that. And we've been talking, we've been dancing around this a bit, but Persistence has a mission statement. It's not just, it's not, it
We're
does
just
produce
a theater. Yeah.
It's not just that. What would you say is the mission statement of Persistence that we're talking about here?
Well, we formed because Trump got elected and I went to the Women's March. You know, so it was the idea.
It's kind
to,
of a big deal, yeah.
Well, found a feminist organization that uses theater as its medium to change hearts and minds. So what we say is we respond to the persistent and universal need for promoting, understanding, and embracing the core beliefs of feminism. And I think a lot of people don't even know what feminism is. Like, I talk to young women who sometimes say to me, oh, I believe in equality, of course, but I wouldn't call myself a feminist.
There seems to be baggage around feminism that some people are
They think it's man-hating or all these stereotypes, which is like, it's just what it is pure and simple. It's political, economic, personal, and social equality. There you go.
Right.
Like, boom. And many women and those who identify as women don't have that. Yeah, and we don't in our society. I mean, look at our leadership politically. I mean, I know it's a bit full circle to mention that again.
That's okay. That's good producing. But let's get back into it, right? Because part of the conversation we're having here today is the gender divide in politics and in leadership and in the arts, you know? And so what, I'll throw it out to you as well, Mallory. What do you think, we talk amorphously about the things, oh, we've only got a minute left. What do you think within the next minute are the kind of barriers preventing women to get more into public life in the arts or in politics?
I think that part of it is about having people that you can look to as role models. Like, I am a producer and a director. I take on leadership roles in theater. That's what I've decided to do. And it was mostly when I started doing theater, I was an actor and all of the directors were men. And I was like, I want to do that job. And so now I try to direct as much as possible because I like it, but also so that other women and people of marginalized genders can see me doing it.
Thank you. Jen, 20 seconds. What barriers can we smash to have more women in the arts and politics?
I think money is definitely a barrier. I think the way our system is set up for political success is not so much about gender, but based on capitalism. So that is, and capitalism patriarchy and feminism are all linked. That's another conversation.
It's the light topics here on the Lunch Bunch. Thank you very much for listening. As usual, we ran out of time. We'll take this up again tomorrow at 12:30. Cheers, folks.